We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
The American Family Association, informing, equipping, and activating to transform American culture.
After the resurrection, when Jesus was given all authority in heaven and on earth, he commissions his disciples to make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything Jesus commanded them.
We at the American Family Association seek to aid the church in our great commission.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. Good morning. It is Wednesday, July 10th, and Joe Biden is still running for president. This has been the headline for the last 2 weeks that I think Representative Chipper yesterday rightly called me up for saying, you know, I'm shocked that the Democrats are still allowing him to do this and that it's still going on. And are we really shocked? No, because at the end of the day, the left overall, and of course, the left and their philosophy is chiefly represented in politics in the United States through the Democrat Party. They are concerned only for power. And however they need to manipulate the rules, the system, whatever, that is their end goal, is just to attain power. And unfortunately, even more so than it used to be in the Republican Party, that is also increasingly the goal. And we've seen that this week as well with the RNC platform and this new platform that is really disappointing for the pro-life community. And it excised a definition of marriage being between one man and one woman, which, of course, is just trying to weaken the stance on traditional marriage, human sexuality, the family, traditional values, all of this. And why? Because so many of the replies that, you know, I've gotten to post on my social media and, you know, responses to this program, not from AFR, but, you know, from our AFR listeners and our AFR family, but from, you know, the left that that does tune in. And I'm glad that they're here because they'll hear biblical truth. Probably nowhere else, unfortunately. But, you know, a lot of the response overall, even from so-called conservatives, are, well, you know, we need to excise this, and we need to not be so bold on these far-right stances so that we can win. And I'm thinking, well, what exactly are we winning if we are caving on all of our stances and we're refusing to stand up and demand of the nominee for the party that, by and large, in the United States, generally is supposed to represent conservative principles, traditional values, that has historically been the Republican side. And that's not true, of course, for every candidate. I mean, this is in large part why I'm not personally a registered Republican. And I was. And then in 2021, I decided to become unaffiliated, based primarily on my own personal experience in Washington, D.C., working for the Trump campaign and collaborating a lot with the RNC and just seeing the corruption there. But this has been the unfolding, not just narrative, but the unfolding reality and truth that we have observed, I think, more starkly over the last 2 weeks from both the Democrat and the Republican side than almost any moment over the last decade or so. I mean, we saw through Barack Obama's presidency how he pushed for queer theory, he pushed for the LGBTQ agenda, and there was this huge cultural shift over those 8 years that really embraced a lot of the left's entire agenda, but the GOP largely is embracing that agenda. I mean, I remember calling out former Chairwoman Ronna McDaniel many times for posting things about Pride Month and support for the LGBTQ agenda, for same-sex marriage, all of these things. And we need to not confuse biblical truth and a biblical worldview that starts first with the Bible and being grounded in what we understand and believe is the revealed truth of God through His Word. And then we build up our policy and our philosophies that impact every area that we live our Christian lives in, which of course includes civil government. So it should be built on the truth. And we need to not confuse the ideas and principles of the biblical worldview with a godless conservatism, because that's ultimately what the GOP is rapidly steering towards. And I personally can't support that. I'm not going to support that. I'm not going to say it's okay. And yes, there are arguments of this is a binary choice and this is always the lesser of two evils. All of that is true. And however, you know, each individual Christian through our conscience and prayer, hopefully, decides to discharge our duty and vote, I always encourage everyone vote in the best possible way to use your blessing of liberty to participate and select and choose our leaders in all areas of government, in all elected office. Use that in the best way possible. And is it true that Donald Trump has better policy positions than Joe Biden? I think so, absolutely. And will he put better judges in place on the federal bench? I think so, absolutely. But does that mean then that I'm just going to defend everything that he is also conceding through this GOP platform and say, well, as long as he's just a little bit to the right of Joe Biden and he's not just, you know, fully embracing queer theory, he's not as, you know, bad. I mean, the Democrats are, you know, these basically communists. I mean, for, it's just accurate, right? They're basically steering toward globalism, communism. They're undermining our national sovereignty, all of those things. As long as he's a little bit to the right of that, then we're not going to criticize that because we want to win. My question is, what exactly are we winning if we concede that much? And we've seen how the godless conservatism has disserved America, not just through government, but also through our culture. Because if you look at a lot of these, you know, influencers and a lot of these talking heads, even on mainstream media, and all of these people who supposedly are on the right and they supposedly represent conservatism, there is this element of, I just want capitalism and I want the government to get off my lawn and government shouldn't tell me what to do. I want to be free to make any kind of choice and live my life however I want without any kind of rules. I mean, that is ultimately it goes back to original sin, which is I want to be my own God, right? I want to be God and I want to be the master of my own universe and I want to decide the measurable difference between right and wrong. That is a godless conservatism. It's not conservative at all, but it is totally godless to say, well, yeah, we want national sovereignty. We want to be America first, but we don't want to have any aspects of morality. I mean, people were even arguing with me on social media yesterday, suggesting that the government should not legislate morality. I mean, this is how, and they are so-called conservatives. I mean, these are people who are out there allegedly, I mean, and self-proclaiming that they are supporting Donald Trump, that they've been members of the Republican Party for a while. And law is always a commentary on what a given government values and an expression of the morality of a given society. Because, of course, we prohibit certain things in our law. We have the entire canon of criminal law and the criminal code is saying that there are certain things that are immoral that are therefore punishable through the state and criminal law. And those things that are punishable and what we determine as a society can be punished through the law is an expression of what we say that is wrong. And there are certain things, and the law calls this malum in se versus malum prohibitum. And I know if any of you have watched Legally Blonde, you're actually familiar with those terms. But really, those are actually in criminal law, not just the scenes in Legally Blonde, but which is a great movie, by the way. I always think it's hilarious. But these are the Latin terms in criminal law for something that is intrinsically evil or evil in and of itself. Things like, you know, rape and murder and, you know, things that hopefully all of us would recognize are just so morally reprehensible. They're evil in and of themselves. And then there are things that are just prohibited in society for the good of society. And the legislature on the state and the federal level and in our constitutional republic have the ability to say, you know, we are going to put up other rules just for the good and the well-being and the well-ordered society, things like speed limits, for example. I mean, is it inherently wrong to go 75 miles an hour? Well, no, because in certain contexts, you can do that. It just depends on the road that you're driving on, right? Where there's no context that rape and murder are ever okay, because murder is, by definition, an unjustified killing. So it's not murder if the killing is justified by definition, right? So all of these things carry an aspect of intrinsic morality. And when we are talking about legitimacy in government, the whole bottom line of what I want you to get from this conversation this morning is that we cannot say that we are okay with divorcing our Christian morality and the recognition of self-evident truth from our policy and our stances and our advocacy in civil government. Because once we do that, then we have conceded that government is inherently amoral, which it's not. So we're lying at that point. And we're saying that this is just a secular humanist playing field now where anything goes as long as whatever party or person is in power and in the majority. That's a completely upside down view of the role of government and the legitimacy of government, because we can't escape the fact that we do legislate morality. It's just, whose morality are we legislating? And that ultimately becomes the question. And so when we are excising in a platform of the party that is supposed to and generally has represented traditional values, Christian values, evangelical values, and biblical values and truth, when we are excising the definition of marriage, when we are weakening the stance on abortion and saying, you know, just give it back to the states and it's fine, whatever the states, each individual state wants to do, as long as the people in the state get to determine for themselves what they think about baby murder, then, you know, we're okay with whatever San Francisco and California and New York decides. That's wrong. That's not even what the Constitution says, but that's also from a moral Christian premise. That is wrong. And so it's not that I'm suggesting that no Christian can vote for Donald Trump or no Christian can, you know, be voting in the Republican Party. What I am suggesting, and what I said on social media as soon as I read the draft of the new Republican Party platform position, is that no Christian can be a Republican, a faithful Republican in that sense, and say, yes, I assent to all of that, and be a faithful Christian. Because when in conflict, you can't have and say that I support two mutually exclusive positions. That's just a logical reality. You can't support two mutually exclusive things. And so as for me and my house, we will choose to serve the Lord and to stand up for the truth and to call out the GOP and say, no, that is wrong. And that is not being a faithful Republican, right? Because I'm not saying, sure, I'm going with that. And I believe everything that the Republicans say, and I'm willing to support the party regardless, which I know a lot of conservatives and a lot of our listeners, you know, tend to be Republicans, because overall, you know, the platform tends to be better than Democrat. The point is, we have to be faithful to God first. And when we are faithful to God first, then we are free to critique and to see that contrast, if there is a contrast, between Whatever a politician or a party or a political policy advocates for and supports, we contrast that with the biblical worldview, which is always our standard. And hopefully, we then collectively, as evangelicals, as Christians, as conservatives, can call the GOP to amend their platform back to reflecting truth, and then we can support it. Because, of course, we support policies, regardless of party. We support policies that are good. We support platforms that are right and truthful, morally sound. But we can't just say, well, this is the most important election in my lifetime, so, you know, hey, we're going to concede all of this, and we are going to assent to something that's not true just because we want to win the election. Because then we are being unfaithful to Christ. Now, of course, we can still vote, and we should vote, and it's always a lesser of two evils. I'm tired of it being more lesser than, you know, actually voting for somebody that I really want to, that I fully support. But we can still do that, being a faithful Christian, but we need to stand up for the truth at every turn. We'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. You've heard a lot about saving babies on this show, and that's because it's important to me personally. And let me just be frank with you, we need to save them. That's why we've partnered with Preborn, the nation's leader in introducing mothers with unplanned pregnancies to their babies. And once she hears that heartbeat and sees that precious life growing inside of her, she is twice as likely to choose life. Now that's a miracle. But quite honestly, if we don't save them, who will? Preborn receives no government funding, so their work is completely dependent on us. Preborn has rescued over 280,000 babies. And that's not all. They provide love, support, and counseling for up to 2 years for free, saving lives and souls. One ultrasound is just $28, or $140, helps to rescue 5 babies' lives. Abortion doesn't stop, so we can't. Together, you and I can save lives. Just dial #250 on your cell and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby. Or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And this news just breaking. Speaker Johnson will deliver a floor speech on the SAVE Act. You all heard Representative Chip Roy on this program yesterday talking about the Safeguard American Voter Eligibility, or SAVE Act. And so that will be today at 12 p.m. Eastern on the floor of the House of Representatives. You can watch it live on X, I'm sure, on C-SPAN and other channels. So if you are interested in hearing Speaker Johnson's remarks there. All right, let's get to this really important case. Missouri has filed suit against the state of New York on 3 counts. So they're invoking original jurisdiction under Article 3, which is if a state sues another state, then the appropriate forum for a trial court level is actually in the U.S. Supreme Court. So Missouri has filed a suit against New York on 3 counts: interference with the presidential election in other states, violation of Purcell, which is a Supreme Court ruling, changing election rules in the months leading up to an election, and violation of the First Amendment. So Attorney General Andrew Bailey, who is leading that charge for the state of Missouri, joins us now. So this really has to do with the criminal case against President Trump, or is this a little bit more broad than that? And good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, good morning, Jenna. Thank you so much for having me on. And this is about fighting for Missouri's sovereign interest to participate in a national presidential election on equal footing with other states. We can't let a rogue prosecutor and a collusive judiciary in the state of New York hijack a national election. And that's exactly what's happening. We know that that criminal prosecution in the state of New York is replete with both constitutional error and conflicts of interest from the bench and the prosecutors. And so this is an important step that we have to take in order to ensure that Missourians have access to and can hear from a presidential candidate in the heat of a campaign in the most consequential election in this nation's history.
And that makes a lot of sense. I mean, this is exactly what the Democrats continue to do, which is to try to manipulate the rules and try to interfere with elections in various ways. And so what is the basis of the lawsuit in terms of proving that? Because I can imagine that what New York will say is, well, then, you know, in their view, Donald Trump isn't above the law. He shouldn't have violated the law, and he can be held accountable just like anybody else. And so, you know, too bad that this comes in an election year.
Yeah, but when a state rigs its system in order to attack a political opponent, and everyone can see all of the constitutional and legal errors inherent in the process and the outcome, it becomes more evident that the objective was never to obtain a legally valid conviction. It was always to take President Trump off the campaign trail, tie him down in a Manhattan courtroom, silence him with a gag order, and ultimately send him to prison, put him on house arrest, put him on probation with onerous conditions of community service that are going to take up his time and keep him off the campaign trail. I mean, this is injecting poison into our democratic process. And so this is above and beyond the state of New York. And the traditional individual criminal defendant appeal process is inadequate to redress the grievances of the people of the state of Missouri who have been chosen as electors at our caucuses to go caucus at the convention for President Trump, and the voters in Missouri who want to hear from President Trump. And I get constituents all the time who call and say, well, can we still vote for President Trump? Should we even show up anymore? Is he going to be able to be on the ballot? Can he serve as president if he's going to prison? So in violation of the Purcell Doctrine, the judiciary in the state of New York, through this illicit witch hunt prosecution, is obfuscating the electoral process.
And I hope that you will get this hearing with the Supreme Court. So, you know, you filed under original jurisdiction. So what would happen next if, and what's the timeline here? Because, of course, you know, November is coming very soon. So are you anticipating that the Supreme Court could hear this very soon, or is this not going to be until they come back into session?
Well, I think that there's a difference between their traditional appellate review docket and their original action docket. And as you identify, this is an original action at the United States Supreme Court pursuant to Article 3, Section 2 of the United States Constitution. The founders contemplated that there would be disputes amongst the states, and they codified a method and a process by which states could redress those grievances. And it's an original action at the U.S. Supreme Court. And so the case has been sent to the Supreme Court, and just yesterday it was docketed. We anticipate that the court will order briefing, responsive briefing from the state of New York anytime, and then we'll get a chance to reply. But if I'm the Supreme Court, I'm holding until September at the sentencing hearing to determine what happens at sentencing, because dependent upon the sentence that the New York judiciary hands down, that could impact the outcome of this case.
Right. And it's interesting to me as well that the sentencing was postponed. And I don't know if you want to comment on, you know, the Supreme Court's immunity case, because obviously, you know, immunity wouldn't attach to anything that was done prior to Trump getting in office. But my understanding now of that particular appeal and why sentencing was moved out is because some of the testimony then that was elicited during trial would have been covered under that immunity decision. And so that's really the basis that they're arguing. So it may end up being a moot issue anyway, and going and having the convictions vacated and all of that, which will be really fascinating to see how that all turns out. And so do you want to comment on that and just how the presidential immunity case really should undermine the New York conviction there?
Yeah, absolutely. It certainly undermines the conviction because of the testimony that would not have been admissible or relevant, but for, you know, the president having immunity. Everyone knew the president had immunity. The court just didn't apply that standard because the United States Supreme Court had not made it explicit yet. But one need look no further than the text, history, and tradition of the Constitution to understand that the president had immunity when he's conducting official acts that are, you know, the core responsibilities of the presidency. And so between that and when you add to that the constitutional error and, again, conflict of interest, this case needs to be thrown out. All these cases need to be thrown out, but this case absolutely needs to be thrown out. But let me say this. Between now and then, Missourians are still suffering because the rogue prosecutor and judiciary in New York have hijacked the election. In other words, the gag order stays in place. This makes no sense. A gag order is to protect the defendant's right to a fair trial. Well, here the prosecutor asked for the gag order, and the judge kept it in place after the trial's over. It makes zero sense, and it's harming Missourians' First Amendment rights to hear from a presidential candidate. And I think the Purcell doctrine, those considerations are actually heightened as we move closer to the election. And so it would have been a huge difference between President Trump being sentenced in July or being sentenced in September. We elevate those Purcell considerations the closer we get to an election. So those are heightened considerations at the sentencing hearing in September. And again, way in favor of the United States Supreme Court holding on this case and ultimately ordering a stay on the New York judiciary to prevent this kind of poison from being injected into the electoral process.
And I'm speaking with Attorney General Andrew Bailey from the great state of Missouri. And, you know, one of the things that I so respect about you is that you're willing to take some of these issues and actually protect your constituents that isn't just state centric, but actually looking more broadly and challenging some of these things like the Biden illegal student loan plan and saying, you know, some of these things that affect your constituency. And it seems like a lot of other, particularly Republicans, frankly, aren't willing to go as far as you have in terms of filing some of these lawsuits. I mean, the Democrats certainly do. They're willing to use all kinds of lawfare to just manipulate the outcome. But you're actually filing suit to protect the interests of your constituents. Why do you think you're the only one really who is doing this at the level that you are?
Yeah, you know, I'm proud to have partnered with my Republican colleagues, you know, more than 160 times in 2023 alone, and we've done it innumerable times in 2024 as we kind of move into the second half of 2024. But let me say this, you know, when I joined the United States Army, one of the first things I learned when learning light infantry tactics was that when you get caught in a near ambush, you assault into the ambush. If you turn and run, they will shoot you in the back. So if you're going to die anyway, assault into the ambush and take as many of the bad guys with you as you can. And so that's the mentality conservatives need to have in today's political battlefield.
Yeah, I could not agree more. And, you know, we are unfortunately turning and running away. I talked about the RNC platform and how that's, you know, it's conceding too much of our values and our stances on traditional marriage, the definition and pro-life and, you know, some of those things. But in terms of just the judiciary, and so, you know, you have filed this motion to block Biden's illegal student loan handout plan. Now a federal court has backed you on that. Where is that case overall as well?
Well, yeah, we put a stop to President Biden's unconstitutional, illegal attempt to saddle working Missouri families with Ivy League debt to the tune of $500 billion nationally, north of $45 million to here at the state of Missouri, because we have the Missouri Higher Education Loan Authority, an apparatus of state government that administers student loan payments and repayments. And so Missourians were absolutely harmed. We proved that the first time we put a stop to President Biden's unconstitutional, illegal attempt to cancel debt. You know, any working family or small business owner will tell you out there, there's no such thing as debt cancellation. Somebody pays that off. And I'm not going to let Joe Biden saddle working Missouri families with that. And so the Supreme Court had spoken on this issue. And what the Supreme Court said was that if the president is going to institute a policy on this order of magnitude, he has to point to explicit authority from Congress. Well, Congress has passed no such bill since June of 2023 when the court struck down Biden's Plan A. Certainly, we know Congress twice rejected such a bill, once in 2019 and again in 2021. And so when President Biden illegally, unconstitutionally came up with Plan B, and we identified it clearly, it's just a blatant attempt to illegally buy votes. We filed suit here in the state of Missouri and got a nationwide preliminary injunction at the United States District Court level. We're waiting to see what the Department of Justice is going to do, whether or not they're going to appeal that decision. But the Supreme Court has spoken, and shame on the president for taking to the stump and bragging about his willful defiance of the Supreme Court. This is a constitutional crisis of the president's own making.
Yeah, and this is just terrible, for lack of a better word, that Biden is going out and saying, you know, I'm willfully defying the Supreme Court. If that had been Donald Trump, you know, during his administration, there would be calls for impeachment and, you know, he's not ascending to the separation of powers and all of this other stuff. And yet it seems like Joe Biden has kind of just gotten a pass. I mean, other than obviously the decisions from the judiciary to actually block that, but there's no real accountability there for that kind of willfulness. I mean, does the immunity decision from the Supreme Court cover even that kind of, you know, because it's an official act, but presumably, to cover that when it's even a blatant and willful illegality?
Yeah, you know, I think that's a very good academic legal question, right? I mean, President Biden should have been the one popping champagne on the White House lawn when the Supreme Court handed down the immunity decision. Instead, he gives a five-minute press conference where he doesn't take any questions and then has to hustle back to the White House before the early bird special at the cafeteria ends, and it bemoans the Supreme Court decision. This shields him from prosecution for aiding and abetting criminal enterprises trafficking in humans and fentanyl across our southern border at his directive. And so, you know, whether or not he would be immune for a willful violation of the law, I think that's a very good question. Probably not. You have to be acting under color of legal authority to remain within your sovereign immunity for an official act. But let me say this as well. You know, these are really just flip sides of the same coin, the lawfare and the illegal attempt to buy off votes. I mean, it's the same thing, right? I mean, he can't win on the merits. He can't win an argument on the merits, so they have to censor conservative voices on big tech. He can't win an election outright, so he has to use lawfare to take his political opponent off the campaign trail. And then he can't maintain his support amongst the key demographics, so he has to buy them off. I mean, it's pathetic, it's embarrassing, and it's antithetical to who we are as a nation.
Yeah, so well said. And I'm speaking with Attorney General Andrew Bailey from the great state of Missouri. And in just the last few minutes I have with you, sir, and you're going to be joining my Salem TV show later this evening, which we're really excited about as well. So everyone can tune in at the Salem News Channel at 9 p.m. Eastern for that show. What else is kind of brewing in terms of what strategically you're looking at for the next steps for any of these other cases? Because you have a lot going on.
Well, certainly. Yeah, we stay pretty busy here in Missouri. You know, I remain concerned about election integrity. We're going back down to the trial court in Missouri v. Biden, the most important First Amendment suit in this nation's history. The court said that we are allowed to continue that case to fight for our First Amendment right to free speech. And we're going to use merits discovery to continue to root out the vast censorship enterprise and build a wall of separation between tech and state to protect our right to free speech and core political speech at that. As we move into an election cycle, we're looking at ways in which the state of Missouri can fight back against the influx of illegal aliens into the United States of America and prevent them from obtaining ballots and illegally voting in our elections. And so we've got a lot going on here in Missouri, but you know, gearing up for this election cycle, I think there's a lot of work to be done to ensure the integrity of the process.
Yeah, and that has really been a concern, I think, over the last several decades. I mean, election integrity is not a new issue, but I think that it reached more of the conscience of the average American and certainly the average conservative through the 2020 cycle. And so where specifically in Missouri or other states, because all states have to participate in the Electoral College, and so everyone needs to play by the same rules and be fair, where are you looking at in terms of some issues that need to be addressed ahead of November?
Well, I think it's ensuring that anyone who's obtaining a ballot can lawfully do so, and that states that are just shipping ballots out with any kind of verification, that there's some kind of check and balance there so that they don't dilute Missouri's voice in the process. And here in Missouri, it's all about reminding folks that we're one of the last states in the nation. It makes it a felony offense to knowingly transport a criminal alien into or through the state of Missouri. That's an anti-human trafficking measure, and we're going to apply that. We're not going to let illegals be shipped into the state of Missouri to upend our social services networks and certainly not to overwhelm our electoral process.
Yeah, so well said. Well, we will be following all of these cases with great interest, especially Missouri versus New York. And hopefully the Supreme Court there will take that up and we will get to see that unfold. But Attorney General Andrew Bailey, always so appreciate your time. Thank you for standing up and championing the U.S. Constitution, the rule of law, and everything that you are doing for Missouri and for our country, really, through your just great progress there in Missouri. So we'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the morning.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And, you know, this election is very critical in November, and a lot of people are concerned about the youth vote. And one youth voter himself is very concerned and wrote a great book that debuted just yesterday titled One Generation Away: Why Now is the Time to Restore American Freedom. And his name is Brilliant Hollyhand, and he is also the GOP Youth Advisory Council co-chairman and the 18-year-old editor and editor-in-chief of the Truth Gazette. So, Berlin, thanks so much for joining, and tell us all about your new book.
Jenna, good morning. Thanks for chatting. It's always an honor to talk to you, and I appreciate the opportunity. You're exactly right. My debut book, One Generation Away, released yesterday, and it debuted at number 3 on the Amazon bestsellers list, which is a tribute to everybody out there that attempts to say that the American dream is dead and buried, Jenna. I think yesterday was living proof that only in this great nation can an 18-year-old going into the senior year of high school publish a book that debuts at number 3. That's quite amazing. It shows the American dream truly alive and well here in this great nation. Listen, that's the message we're trying to get out with this book. You know, I know you hear it all the time. I hear it constantly as we travel the country. My peers, my parents, my grandparents, they do not believe that there is hope in this great nation, and we're trying to dispel that rumor. My message throughout the book is constantly, I don't put my hope in any D.C. bureaucrat. I put my hope in Jesus Christ alone. And we absolutely think that that's the winning message. It's a positive, prosperous message that we can get out there. Your audience can get signed copies at brylandbook.com.
That's amazing. And congratulations. I mean, number 3 on Amazon is huge. And, you know, I've been following you for years. I mean, did you start Truth Gazette at around, was it 13 or 14?
It was 11.
11. Oh, my gosh. Well, I think I've known you since you were 13 or 14, but oh, my goodness.
Yes,
so, yeah. And, you know, and I've met you and your mom, and, you know, you're a great just family. And I love the emphasis that you have on Christ as Lord and to put our hope only in him. And then through that, and I was just talking earlier in the program about how we have to focus first and foremost on the biblical worldview, and then our policy and our view of government, as our founders did, comes, of course, from recognition that it is God who endows us with our inalienable rights, and how we have created this great country. And then, of course, those of us who've inherited the blessings of liberty can move forward. And so with the generation that you're primarily speaking to, you know, the new voters, the 18 and a little bit plus the Gen Zers, what has been the biggest hurdle, in your opinion, in reaching them with this message of inspiration of why they need to engage in this great country?
It's definitely that so many of my peers out there are so turned off by politics. They look at it from afar and say it's too divisive, it's too much drama, it's not really something that they're interested in. But at the same time, they're also looking out at the same nation that you and I are looking out at, and they're concerned. They're concerned that we're not going to be able to grow up in a free America. They're concerned that we're not going to be able to raise future families in a free America. So they have concerns, but it's difficult to get them to take that step of, first of all, just paying attention, because it's so much to pay attention to. But second of all, if I'm asking them to speak out or, you know, express their concerns, they're terrified of being canceled. They're scared of being canceled within their communities, within their schools, even within their friend groups. Because, Jenna, I mean, you and I speak out all the time, and we lose friends constantly, but it's because they're speaking the truth, and you know that. And I'll say, to your point about faith, the actual reason I wrote this book is because I believe the cornerstones of America are faith, family, and freedom. And the left knew when they attacked those cornerstones, we would be a train going off the track, and that's exactly what they did. So when we want to restore American freedom, as the subtitle of the book says, we have to restore the morals and values of faith, family, freedom, and that starts within the homes.
Yeah, it really does. And, you know, you have worked with the GOP specifically on the Youth Advisory Council. And, you know, this week we have now seen the new draft platform of the RNC that has really watered down a lot of that pillar of the family by removing the definition of a traditional marriage as being between one man and one woman, and really watering down the pro-life message. Do you have concerns about the future of the party, the Republican Party, and really staying grounded in those pillars of freedom?
I'll say this, Jenna, and I know you'll agree with this, that I'm a faith first person. Any viewpoint, any, you know, opinions I have on policies come strictly from my faith. So I'm a Christian first, and I'm conservative because that most closely aligns with my Christian faith. But above all, I'm a Christian. I'm pro-life and proud of it, and will not be ashamed of that. I absolutely think that the Republican Party has a messaging issue on issues like abortion. For too long, we've come on a debate stage and said, we're anti-this, we're anti-that, we're anti-that, we're taking this way, we're taking this way, we're taking this way, instead of saying we're pro-life, we're pro-family, pro-woman, and explaining why abortion is murder, instead of just saying abortion is murder and walking off the debate stage. It absolutely is a conversation that needs to be had. unfortunately, Republicans in the past and currently are too scared. They don't want to have confrontation. They don't want to have conversation. I don't think they're understanding how vital being pro-life is. It's not just something we're trying to win an issue on. It's literally life or death, Jenna.
Yeah, so well said. And that is a perfect example of exactly what I was talking about in the first segment of being a Christian first and then building up your worldview from there. So for everyone listening, if an 18-year-old can so eloquently say it the way that Brylan just did, that should be the message that all of us are saying. And I am so proud of you for having that firm stance and being able to articulate it in that way, because you're so right that, you know, for all of my lifetime, I mean, Roe was a decade before I was even born. And the left has continued to tell us, well, we don't even have a debate because that's super precedent. And I think that a lot of Americans, and especially the younger generation, you know, millennials and down, we weren't really prepared to have a debate on the merits because for so long we have been shut out. And so so with, you know, your book and your encouragement of getting back to forming a more perfect union, what would you encourage, especially your age group, to understand so that we can participate more precisely in these types of debates and actually advocate for what our country was founded on?
Yeah, absolutely, Jenna. You know, the first way that we can start healing this country, and this goes for both sides, is sitting down and having conversations. When we lost civil discourse in America, we lost our unity, and that's been more evident as each year passes. My favorite chapter in the book is called Hard Conversations and the Path Forward, and it very simply lays out several hard conversations that happened throughout my life. The first one I'll give you an example of simply here is when I called out the RNC. You remember this, because you and I were texting during this time a few years ago. When I went on TV, I called out the RNC for their lack of youth engagement. I got a text from Ron McDaniel to ask for a meeting, and I was like, oh my goodness, like, I'm getting blacklisted from the party. Like, this is it. I'm done. And she actually reached out to ask if I would form the youth council. And so I had to fly out to D.C., sit and have a hard conversation with her. I was a very, you know, big critic of her, but we sat down, had a conversation, agreed to put our differences aside to win the youth vote. Those hard conversations are what actually bring about change. So I say this to my peers out there, sit down with somebody that you disagree with. Even if it's somebody in your neighborhood, in your school, in your class, whatever it may be, sit down and have that conversation. If you leave the table still disagreeing, at least you had the conversation. That's better than the position we're in right now.
Yeah, so well said. And so your book is One Generation Away, Why Now is the Time to Restore American Freedom. You can get that on Amazon and contribute even more to getting this up to the number one position for Brylan Hollihan. And you know, you are a great example as well of homeschooling. And so for the homeschooling parents out there, you know, it's so true that if you invest in discipleship of your kids, that, you know, we really take, and I'm a homeschool grad as well, and we really do take that discipleship and can go out and continue to advocate for truth into our adult lives. And you've barely started your adult life, and you're already doing way more than I was doing at 18. And so congratulations for that. But this book, is this geared primarily toward your peers as the audience, or is it also, you know, for parents and others as well?
Yes, I think this book's, you know, very unique. This is for three different audiences. First is for my, you know, peers out there, peers that want to get involved in politics but don't really know where to start, peers that are scared looking at politics, but again, just don't really know where to get that entry point. This is absolutely for my peers. It's also for parents out there, parents who want to fight back against the indoctrination they're seeing go on in the classrooms every day, want to instill these conservative Christian values in the homes. It's so important for them. And finally, Jenna, it's for grandparents. Grandparents who look out across the nation right now and do not recognize this America that they raised their children in, and want their grandchildren to be raised in a better America.
And so what would be your encouragement to the parents and the grandparents who are listening? Because we have a lot of those here at AFR, who, you know, maybe their kids or their grandkids are kind of disillusioned with America. They're not really excited to engage in civics. And, you know, they're listening to you thinking, wow, I really wish that, you know, my child or grandchild was as excited about engaging. What would be your encouragement to them for their kids or grandkids?
You and I have said this several times, and I'll reiterate it again today. The world outside your front door is crazy and radical and wild and so ungodly. You can start changing the script within your own home. It starts within your living room. Yes, the indoctrination in schools are bad. Yes, what they're doing on college campuses is bad. Yes, what they're you know, what's happening out here in the streets is disgusting. But you can start flipping that script by raising young Christian conservative patriots in your own home, and that relies on the parents and grandparents to step up.
So well said. Well, Brylan Hollihan, thank you so much for your time this morning. And again, the book is One Generation Away, Why Now is the Time to Restore American Freedom. You can go on Amazon or elsewhere and get this book and support a just really excellent conservative Christian in his mission to advocate to his generation. And I just so appreciate how straightforward and willing to take a stand. There are a lot of Christians, and especially, you know, I think a lot of homeschool grads that are willing to do that. But just in the last few minutes that we have in this show, I wanted to also play this clip going back to, you know, why the whole controversy about, you know, Joe Biden and the Democrats are really facing this controversy. This, you know, speaking about truth, I don't think that the Democrats are just now considering, you know, that, oh, wow, there's something wrong with Joe Biden. But this was absolutely wild on MSNBC. They actually had a Parkinson's doctor on talking about his observation of Joe Biden just from observing. Like, he hasn't, at least that he disclosed, he hasn't actually done any sort of actual interaction or anything with Joe Biden, just watching him on the debate stage, watching him at other appearances. And this was just an incredible exchange. This is cut two.
You noticed anything that gives you a red flag as a doctor?
Oh, yeah. I see him 20 times a day in clinic. I mean, it's ironic because he has just this classic features of neurodegeneration. I mean, word finding difficulties, and that's not, oh, I couldn't find the word. That's from degeneration of the word retrieval area.
He's also overcome stuttering, though. Could that be part of that, too?
No, this is not a palatal issue or a speech discrepancy, which is very different from a lemino dysfunction, actual word retrieval, where you pick a similar question or talk around the issue, plus the rigidity, monotone voice.
Wait, go back to that, the rigidity. What do you mean?
Rigidity, loss of arm swing, standing up lordotically. You notice when he turns, it's kind of end block turning. It's not a quick turn. That's one of the hallmarks of Parkinsonism is rigidity and bradykinesia, slow movement. And he has that hallmark, especially with the low voice that said was a cold, hypophonia. A small monotone voice like this over time is a hallmark of Parkinsonism. I could have diagnosed him from across the mall.
Here are some of the symptoms from Parkinson's. We just had him up there on the screen. If we can put him back. What about the movement? Some people have pointed out the way he walks. Sometimes it's not very fast, small steps. Is that something that is common in people who are battling a disease like Parkinson's?
Yeah, it's a hallmark. Shuffling gait, we call that. So little steps. Loss of arm swing from the rigidity. When we walk, we have a nice cadence. You notice he doesn't really swing his arms. And end block turning, meaning he kind of pivots around his foot. If you said, hey, President Biden, he wouldn't go like this.
But I also know, tell me if I'm wrong here, it's very hard to diagnose Parkinson's, isn't it? It's not simple. I mean, I've heard that it can be.
One of the easier movement disorders to diagnose, actually.
Right.
But it's so clinic. There's very little other. And I'm a Democrat, I always say,
yeah,
about this.
Right.
It's just like, this guy is not a hard case.
But I've had relatives who have gone through issues, neurological issues, and I've heard that sometimes Parkinson's is not very easy to nail. You have to take a lot of tests.
It's early on, if you're just present with like hallucinations, that could be a variety of things, or just the cognitive problems. That could be Alzheimer's versus Parkinsonism, and that becomes a little nebulous. But once you start manifesting the hallmark motor symptoms,
right,
slow movement, rigidity, mass facies, hypophonia. I mean, if a med student did not pick Parkinson's on the test, they'd be remediated.
So let me ask you, you're a Democrat, you're a doctor. You sound like you're frustrated with what the White House is saying.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, because, you know, I'm an American before everything. And I look at it and say, when I used to see Russia, Soviet Union, North Korea, when they just make outrageous things, you know, like when North Korea can't keep the lights on and they say, oh, you know, it was some faulty power thing. I kind of hate that kind of stuff. They had 4 years, my own party had 4 years to find, you know, this was a wreck in slow motion. And they had 4 years to find, out of 350 Americans, one person that could take the place. And here we are the day before school trying to do the homework and replace a guy who's got a neurodegenerative disease.
Incredible. And yet the number three Top trending headline, at least according to Salem this morning, is that momentum to replace Biden is slowing down only after Biden is refusing to give up candidacy. And we just need to be praying for this nation. And, you know, to Brian's point earlier, you know, this is something where we need to be engaging our young people. We need to be engaging our communities. Every Christian needs to be praying for the future of this nation, because this isn't just about Republicans or Democrats or, you know, winning for some party political reason. This is ultimately about preserving the integrity of our nation. And I don't even see how the Democrats can walk this back now after they're actually willing to go out on MSNBC and have these kinds of segments. But the bottom line, friends, be praying for our nation, for our country, especially over the next 7 months. That's all the time that we have for Jenna Ellis this morning. Today, you can always reach me and my team, jenna@afr.net.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.